All right. Welcome back to Podcast Recovery. We are your hosts, David O.
And Eric V.
Today we are joined by our esteemed guest, Mackenzie. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Not sure I'm esteemed, but thank you.
Just take it. Take it. God damn it. I already asked you how you were doing. Where are you from?
Baltimore, Maryland, or a suburb of Baltimore, Maryland. Towson.
Towson. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. When were you first introduced to recovery?
Actually, it was in high school. My mother required that I go to AA with a piece of loose leaf paper to be signed, kind of like a junior court slip.
Oh, nice.
So I wouldn't say I was introduced to recovery at that point. I was introduced to meetings.
To the fellowship.
Wow, a junior court slip.
There's a junior court slip?
That's pretty dope.
Like from like a truancy officer? Is this like the 50s?
Oh, it's a piece of paper from your mom.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
Did you miss that part?
I glazed over it because I was planning my comment in my brain, so I stopped listening.
All right.
And how long have you been sober?
501 days today.
501 Whoa. Days. Clap track, Eric.
I'll fix it in post.
It's the worst clap track ever. All right. Well, that's awesome. And without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to you. Share your story with us.
All right. Thank you, guys. My name is Mackenzie. I'm in a fellowship.
Fellowship.
Cool. My sobriety date is September 5th of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor, though if there's anything I don't do very well in my program, it's keep in constant contact. I used to call her when I was in crisis, and then she kind of pointed out, you know you only call me when you're in crisis. And instead of just calling her all the time, I just stopped calling.
That's one way to go about that.
Solid planning.
We're actually meeting Sunday to do a little more work, and now that I have a sponsee in the program, it's kind of holding me accountable to do more in mine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I guess I'll talk a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now.
Mm-hmm.
Born and raised in Towson, Maryland. Two parents that were lawyers. My mom was they went to law school together in their 30s, and my mom was actually pregnant with me when she went. And this is kind of complicated, so I'm going to need everybody to stick with me on this.
Okay.
So my mother was married to a gentleman that played for the Baltimore Orioles in the 1970s.
Shut up.
They had two kids, my older sister, who is 14 years older than me, and my brother, who is 10 years older than me. And he is also 11 years sober, which is cool because he's 10 years older than me in life and also 10 years older than me in sobriety.
Nice.
So my mother then left their father for my father, and they had me. And a few years later, my father left my mother for someone else and had two girls, my two little sisters, who are 6 years younger and 8 years younger. So my older siblings have no relation to my younger siblings.
That's a span of 18 years.
And in essence, I am the oldest, youngest, middle, and only child.
Wow.
So
that's complex.
So if you want to talk about identity issues,
whoa.
You know, I was the oldest at one house, the youngest at the other house. I'm in the middle because I have two older and two younger, and I'm the only one that comes from my two parents.
Wow.
So, like, my sister could marry my brother and have children, and it would totally not be weird.
My fiance is going to listen to this, and, like, she thought her shit was fucked up. That's, like, way more complex.
Good. I always like to be more fucked up than everybody else.
So. Oh, God. I didn't. Damn it. Shot myself in the foot on that one.
So my parents got divorced when I was around 4, and I remember having constant anxiety. I hated going to my father's house because everything was structured and kind of stereotypical families eating together, whatnot. And at my mother's house, since I was her third kid and she was a single mom working, I was kind of left to my own devices, but in a way that I liked because I could do what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
People say I could drink and drug the way I wanted to. Well, I was 4, so I wasn't drinking and drugging at this point, but I could...
That would be a bit early.
I could watch TV the way I wanted to.
Nice.
Let's talk about it that way. So I always had dread going to my father's house and anxiety. I felt uncomfortable in my own skin. When I was 5 or 6 years old, I told everyone to call me David because I wanted to be a guy.
Yeah, that's a solid name.
Yeah, it's a great name. Although you didn't pick it, I picked it.
Yes, you come before me, so yes.
So
I was actually going to call myself Mackenzie when I was five.
That's awesome.
So much in common.
I like that. So, you know, had I been born in a later time, I may have transitioned. Who knows? But, you know, back in the day, they just kind of laughed and said, oh, look at the funny little tomboy, and did not call me David. So that was the first thing I kind of had to accept. You know, I wanted to be a guy, and I wasn't a guy. And I had to learn how to accept that. And then as I got older, I realized, you know, in order to be with all the girls that I had all these crushes on, I didn't have to be a guy. I was just going to be a lesbian. So that was the second thing. I didn't want to be gay, but I was. I had to accept that. So getting into middle school, high school, I started drinking, I think, in middle school. And
do you remember your first drink?
I'm not one of those people that's like, and the angels sung from heaven above and all my anxiety was gone and I thought I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Like, no, that's not my experience.
Do you remember what it was, though?
Well, see, it started with sips of beer from, like, my dad or from, like, my brother. And actually, when I was in middle school, I used to tend the keg at my brother's keg parties. So
nice.
That definitely gave me the, like, look how cool alcohol is view. But I do remember very specifically, there was one time, I think I was maybe 13 or 14, and I had had 2.5 Miller Lights, and I felt wonderful. And I remember thinking, the secret to life is 2.5 Miller Lights.
Wow.
I chased that 2.5 Miller Light buzz for the rest of my life and overshot most of the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't drink alcoholically right off the bat, but, you know, as I got into high school, then drugs came into the picture, and my first addiction, aside from attention, was pot, and I smoked pot every day, you know, waking up in the morning, whatever, but I was not by any means a stoner. I did not like getting high with my friends. It was not, it was self-medicating 110%. I needed it to eat, I needed it to sleep, and I needed it to not be an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I did basically every drug you could think of. The first time I did heroin was junior year of high school. We were supposed to be getting coke, and my friends came back, and they were like, we couldn't get that. All we could get with was this. I found out years later that was their full intention. They just wanted my money to help them get what they wanted.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
You literally got dope fiended.
Yes.
100%.
Totally makes sense.
That is the definition of that.
I did it. I threw up and I felt amazing. But me and three other friends started doing it casually. And at that time, I was the only one that didn't end up shooting it and didn't end up addicted and in rehab. And I surfed that, look how much better I am at you than you at doing heroin wave for a very long time.
Wow.
And that's an honor, though. You want to hold that up high.
I mean, come on. Like, from what I knew, you do heroin, you get addicted, you die. And I had rules, you know, never more than $20 in a day, never more than 3 days in a row. Very specific rules that I stuck to for a while.
For a while, right?
Yeah. Manageable heroin addiction.
I can totally relate to exactly what you just said.
Yeah. Well, it was the same with drinking. You know, like, I'm not going to drink after five, or I'm not going to do shots. I'm just going to drink beer. All the stuff that they talk about in that one book.
I never had any of those rules.
Rules keep you good for a little while.
Also, you know, my mother made me go to AA in high school and have a piece of paper signed junior court slip.
Were you going high to fellowship meetings?
Yeah, I'm sure, because I was stoned all the time. Oh, I mean, I wasn't stoned, because to me, stoned implies, like, glazy eyes and, like, stupid and, like, no. I went without having a panic attack. Let's put it that way.
There you go.
And I remember sitting in meetings and thinking, these people aren't alcoholics, because if they were really alcoholics, they would be drinking. And I love drinking and drugs much more than these people in this meeting, because I love it so much that I'm going to figure out how to do it without ruining my life so I don't end up here.
Yeah.
And that was my first introduction to meetings. So, as I said, dabbled in pretty much everything in high school, drank throughout my entire life. And the way that my drinking worked is I would drink, everything would be fine, like a gentleman or a lady, if you will. And then I would you know, get drunk and make out with someone and lose a relationship, or I would get drunk and crash a car.
Yeah.
Or I would lose my job because I didn't show up because I was drunk. And I was constantly self-sabotaging because I was really good at being the hero of my own life and being like, I'm going to come back from this. And my mom's going to think I'm amazing and everybody's going to be so proud of me. And I would. I would dig these holes and I would slowly climb out and everything would seem fine until I fell into another hole. constant pattern. I managed to get through college. It took me 9 years, but I did. And I changed my major 3 times because if there was something I didn't want to do, I wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm. I had this theory growing up that the way to be happy was to only do what you wanted to do. You know, and I was like, why do all these people do shit they don't want to? Like, that's ridiculous. You deserve better. You know, like if you want to not go to work and get drunk with your friends, then you should, because life is short, guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
So
YOLO.
That was my big thing, too.
YOLO.
He's dabbing.
I dabbed.
I always thought that I would be dead by 30 because.
Yep.
Musical geniuses and poets and all the amazing people of the world don't get old, and only the good die young. Mm-hmm. I wanted to live my life like a Billy Joel song.
Hell yeah, Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love Billy Joel.
Hell yeah.
And so, yeah, I was definitely impulsive. I was definitely self-serving. And I realized in sobriety not too long ago, people used to talk about how the disease of alcoholism and addiction is being self-centered. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I fucking hate myself. Like, I hate myself.
Yeah.
How can I be self-centered? And then I realized the phrase, I hate myself, still has self in it.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. Starts with I.
Yes, you can hate yourself,
mm-hmm.
still self-centered.
Wow.
I thought that I was just completely selfless because I didn't care about me. So, of course, I cared about you more than I cared about me, which wasn't hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
so, yeah. Moving along, college, drinking, sabotage, relationships, car crashes, DUIs, those were in there too.
Oh, yeah.
And strangely, I was never required to go to meetings. In high school, I got busted smoking pot on senior cut day and had to go to some, like, drug classes or whatever, which was really just a means for me and my drinky, druggy friends to spend time together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I'll see you at drug class. Great. Let's drink after. Awesome. Mm-hmm. but I had a lot of consequences. And what's strange is that, you know, I've been addicted. Well, we'll get there. Let's get there.
Mm-hmm.
Time-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So, in 2013, I moved to Los Angeles. That's another thing. I was a big geographical person. I moved to Chicago to do comedy. I just got drunk and wasted my time.
Mm-hmm.
And the ruse was, I'm going to come home because I need to get a college degree. Because if this comedy thing doesn't work out, I need to have something to fall back on.
Yeah.
And here I am now in my mid-30s, and my comedy career might be what I'm falling back on because my college degree isn't doing shit.
That's ironic.
Yes.
Mm.
But I came back home, and then years later, I would travel up to New York to do comedy. And in 2013, I decided to move to Los Angeles and give it a go. I did not do one open mic, one set. Didn't go to Second City, didn't do UCB. I went out there and 2 weeks in went to Jenna Jameson's birthday party.
Shut up.
Got drunk. And by Jenna Jameson's birthday party, I mean I was invited to the club by the promoter and sat on the wrong side of the velvet ropes watching everybody party while I got drunk.
Oh, wow. That sounds sad.
It's an honest program. It is sad.
That's a sad thing.
And I got drunk and went home with a guy, of all people. I don't even like guys. That's one of the greatest things I realized in sobriety. I was like, you know, if I never drink again, I never have to sleep with another guy.
Yeah.
Because I never did it sober, you know? So anyway, I'm leaving this person's house. Yeah. I'm leaving this guy's house, and it's in a gated community.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot find the way to walk out. I can only find the way to drive out. Like, the car sets off the gate and opens. So I'm, like, waiting for cars to go by so I can sneak through the gate to get out. And I climb the fence, and I'm wearing my, what I call my dyke heels. They're, like, platform shoes. They're creepers, if you're familiar. And
wow.
I climbed the wall, and I jumped down and snapped my ankle.
Oh.
And I'm in a blackout at this point. I would say brownout because I can remember parts of it.
Uh-huh.
I remember trying to tie my shoe tighter to keep my ankle together.
Oh my God.
And then I'm laying in the street screaming.
This is in LA?
Mm-hmm. Laying in the street screaming by myself. Can't find my phone because losing your phone as an alcoholic is a common occurrence. I'm sure that for drug addicts, selling your phone is a common occurrence.
Yeah.
So an ambulance shows up and I'm screaming at them in my drunkenness. Call me a cab. I can't afford this. Call me a cab. I cannot afford this. They get me. And my brother comes and he's like, look, I'm going to take care of you through this, but you need to do 90 and 90. You mm-hmm. need to go to 90 oh. meetings in 90 days. So mm-hmm. what frickin' choice do I have? I'm like, sure. Yeah. You know, like, my leg is broken. I don't know anyone in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to a few meetings, but my leg was broken and my brother worked. So I was listening to meetings a lot.
Oh,
speakers, right. speakers online. Listening, whatever. I, you know, had a book and was doing very minimal, but I did make it those 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a little bit of a view into what sobriety could be like. Mm-hmm. However, I'm in a city where I don't know anybody, and I think everybody's cooler than I am because we're in LA.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They're the LA people.
So I did not get into the LA meeting scene. And on day 91, as a reward for my 90 days of sobriety, I got drunk.
I've always been curious about the LA meeting scene. Like, do you like go there and it's like, oh, there's a famous person sitting right next to me, and like, do you acknowledge it?
I have been, because my family I still have family in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and I went there this past summer, which was my first time being there in sobriety.
Yeah,
and so I went to meetings, of course. There was actually a meeting I went to with my brother during that 90 and 90 where I did see an actor, and he wasn't anybody big, but I'm super nerdy, so yeah. I, like, know all, like, the B and C and D actors.
I'm a human IMDb.
Mm-hmm. Me too. People used to call me before Google.
Air high five.
Nobody calls
anymore.
Just
air high five that.
Nobody needs me anymore.
Oh, damn it.
So I did say, you know, hey, I've seen your show and whatever. Now, in hindsight, now that I'm more into the program, I don't even think I would acknowledge it. Although there was a point where I wanted Jody Sweetin to be my sponsor.
Yeah. Well, like, there's some of the actors from, like, The Wire around here in Baltimore that we've seen in meetings and shit like that. And, like, I acknowledged it once. I was like, dude, you're in The fucking Wire. He was like, yeah, I know.
And then you're like.
Then I'm like, okay, I'm a dick now.
Yeah,
I'm going to walk away because that was the whole of my conversation.
They're just people.
I know.
Yeah.
And he was. Yeah, he was a nice guy.
I went to a meeting in New York a couple weeks ago because I was up there. I love Christmas time in New York. And one of my favorite He wasn't my favorite. One of the drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race was there.
Nice.
In his male form. So I saw him and I'm like, this dude looks so familiar, whatever. And then he shares what his name is. Of course, I Googled, like, his name and drag queen. And he comes up.
Nice.
And I was like, should I follow these guys to the diner? And I'm like, no, that's really creepy. So.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you're asking, should I follow them?
That's too much.
I did have more time than him, though, which... Nice. All right, this is getting unspiritual.
Yes. We've digressed.
Yeah.
So let's
you're
get
in
back
LA.
To
yeah. Celebratory 90.
Well, yeah, I come home because LA's not working out, and I come home like a dog between my tail between my legs. Day 91, I drink, and everything goes back to the way it was. And a year later, I started taking pills, and then heroin's cheaper. And I had managed to do it successfully before.
Oh, yeah.
So started doing it, tried to keep the rules. The rules went out the window.
Yep.
I got my...
They always do.
I got my partner into it because I didn't want to do it alone, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we were together for 9 years. We were engaged for 6 years. During the time I went out to L.A., we were still together.
That's a bit of an extended engagement.
For 6 years?
3 years. Sorry. We were engaged for 3 years.
I was like, engaged for six?
Yeah, I was like, good Lord.
It was a long engagement, but it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I'll get you there.
Okay. Cool.
All right.
Yeah.
So, January 13th of 2017, she doesn't come home from work. And as far as I know, we weren't using that day because we would quit all the time. Mm-hmm. Great quitter. I was a great quitter. I mean, I went through withdrawals so many times, and it's kind of pathetic.
Oh, God.
Because most people, if it's not working, will do more.
Yeah.
Right? No. If it wasn't working for me, I would quit and wait. and then do the same amount, which is probably why I'm sitting here today.
That's a dangerous recipe.
That's
a risky operation right there.
What
are you going to say, Eric?
No, I'm
spit
just
it out.
So confused. It's fine.
Most people don't do that. But no. I knew that if I did more, I would just end up dying or spending more money or whatever it was.
No, I get that. It's just, just quitting all the time, that hurts.
Yeah, it was rough.
Not down with
Shut
that.
Up, Eric.
Right? Like all saying, the anxiety.
Like logically, it's like you just feel like shit all the time.
Yeah.
And then
you
feel,
many withdrawals.
That's,
I was a lot. And the worst part of it, too, is that I always quit with the intention of doing it again. It's not like I was ever quitting. People share their stories of waking up in the morning and saying, I'm never going to drink again. Like, no, I woke up in the morning like, I'm going to do heroin in 5 days.
That's crazy.
When my tolerance is down and I can afford it.
Wow.
Plus, I wasn't using it intravenously, so...
Rationalizations.
Another reason why I'm probably alive.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So anyway, she doesn't come home. And my codependence saved her life because while most people would be like, she's at work, she's busy, whatever, I drove to her work and looked in the window and she had overdosed. She's alive.
That's good.
It was a locked building, so I had to wait for the paramedics, whoever, to get there to break in to get to her.
Oh, God.
They said she was unresponsive. You think I would be freaking out, but for whatever reason, God moment, I felt like now I can finally stop. Everybody's going to know. Mm. This is it.
Yeah.
And she woke up. We spent the night together in the hospital. Mm-hmm. She went home. She was going to have a night at home with her family, and then I was going to go over the next day. And when I went over the next day, they wouldn't let me see her. I dropped off our dog, her dog, because I never got to see the dog again. I think it was a poodle mix, but it didn't look ugly like a poodle. It was like beagle.
Mm.
Beagle poodle.
A peagle.
A boodle.
A boodle. Yeah. Much better. Sorry.
She calls me 2 weeks into rehab because they ship her off to rehab. And mm-hmm. we were supposed to go out to Los Angeles, so my mom had to, eat the plane ticket that she paid for.
Ooh.
Someone's life is more important.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
She goes to rehab. I'm miserable because here, my other half of 9 years is not with me, and mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I go to a few meetings, use a couple more times, drank, every night because I was trying to fall asleep.
Yeah.
But finally, my first semi-sobriety date, I guess, because I got sober on January 29th of 2017. Mm-hmm. And I came into the rooms, and I did not get a sponsor because I wanted a gay man sponsor. Because anybody else, there would be... If it was a straight man, he would fall in love with me, obviously. If it was a straight girl, I would fall in love with her. Because that's totally my type. And I'm not a big fan of lesbians. It probably has something to do with self-hatred.
Wow.
We're cool now.
That's a complex scenario right there.
Very specific.
But that's the thing. I had this specific... Oh, with a crystal meth problem. Because that's the one drug I had no interest in.
Only crystal meth.
Yep. So, if there are any gay men out there with a crystal meth problem and you're in the program...
We have a sponsee for you.
In the Baltimore area.
I'm accepting applications.
Well, with the advent of Skype and everything, I suppose they could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Just contact us at podcastrecovery.com. We'll hook you up.
So, I started fellowshipping, and 2 weeks into this, it wasn't 2 weeks. It was a week sober. And 2 weeks after my ex had gone to rehab, she called and ended the relationship. And another God moment, I tell her, I love you. I just want you to be happy. I completely understand whatever's best for you. And, meanwhile, she is shocked. I could hear her chin hit the floor, whatever rehab she was at. Because she was expecting, I'm going to fucking kill myself. I can't live without you.
Yeah.
I can't do this. How could you do this to me? But no, somebody else took my body over and said mature adult things.
Yeah.
But I have not spoken with her since then. And this is after 9 years of being together, being engaged, living together.
Wow.
And I ran into her at a meeting a few months later. And I didn't expect her to be at that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
She walked in, sat down, listened to the speaker, and then left before any of the sharing, said nothing to me. Mm-hmm. And that kind of said everything that I needed it to say.
Yeah.
I have speculated how she feels about what happened many, many times, but the program has taught me you don't always get closure in, like, a little nice, neat box.
Question relating to that real quick. Do you think there's, like, an eighth and ninth step situation there?
Yeah, I'm actually in the middle of the ninth step. Mm-hmm. Now, when I first told my present sponsor the mm-hmm. situation, she was like, no, we're not doing that. You're not contacting her.
Yeah.
Whatever. But apparently I've made some kind of progress because now she's like, look, we'll write the letter. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it sounds and decide if you want to send it.
Okay.
I think she's aware that I'm doing well mm-hmm. in my program because I'm, like, still friends with her aunt on Facebook. And we have mutual friends in the program, even though I think we're in different fellowships. I'm not positive what she's in. Hmm. But I do know that there are people that we have in programs that are mutual friends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've spoken a number of places. I'm sure that she knows I'm doing well.
Are you guys in the area?
She's from Essex and I'm from Towson, but she is now, like, in the Annapolis area, I think. Okay. And her sister's also in recovery. That's so
Bay Area.
Oh my God. That's not San Francisco.
No, that's a way cooler Bay Area.
Yeah.
So that's
Edgewater.
It's great. Pasadena.
I always say too that, you know, I originally got sober because I was like, we're going to get sober and we're going to be together and everything's going to be great. And people say you can't get sober for other people. I strongly disagree. There's no wrong reason to get sober.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care if you're getting sober because
that shit.
Your dog needs someone to walk them.
Yeah.
Like, fine.
Valid reason.
You got to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Staying sober and being happy, though, it's got to be kind of self-propelled, if you will.
Yes.
So anyway, I came into the program a week of being single. A week, ladies and gentlemen. This is what a horrible person and codependent person I am. I get reconnected with someone that I was best friends with at the age of 11.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been together ever since. I don't recommend getting in a relationship in the first year.
Yeah.
And I realize now that's not for you. That's for whoever's got to deal with your shit.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So I've been with her.
I've never thought of that.
Yeah.
That's really profound.
It's not for you.
I've never thought of that. It's not for you. It's definitely for the other fucking person because, mm-hmm. my first year, I was batshit. So
yeah.
For my girlfriend 6 years ago, sorry, I was batshit.
Yeah. So she's actually normal, too. Well, she's normal meaning she's not an alcoholic or addict.
She's a muggle.
Yes. A normie. But
I call them muggles.
So I have a new girlfriend, I get a new job, like, everything's starting to pick up, and I don't have a sponsor, and I'm not working any steps. Mm-hmm. I'm going to meetings, and I'm fellowshipping,
mm-hmm.
but one day I get out of the shower, right, and I have this thought, you're never going to be high again. That was terrifying.
Mm.
And in that moment, somebody texted me and offered me something for free, and with no defense, I went back out.
Yeah, it never happens when you're actually in active sobriety or addiction. Like, it's always as soon as you're like, I'm going to change my life. I'm in recovery now. Hey, man, I got a freebie.
Cool. I'm there. So, no defense. And I went back out for 5 months. I lied to my partner. I did not use with anybody. Like, fortunately for me, they say change people, places, and things. Well, mm-hmm. aside from my partner, who wasn't in my life anymore, I didn't have any people to cut out. Because I used by myself and drank, I drank with other people, but
that's not that Eric's like, yes, I'm 100% on that.
What, using by yourself?
Yeah.
It's the only way to use.
Yeah. You don't want anybody to see you like that, right?
Well, just, I don't want to share.
Oh, no, that too. But, what was I going to say about using by myself? Oh, the funny thing is so my alcoholism, the only time my alcoholism wasn't like really screwing up my life was mm-hmm. when I was busy doing heroin. It was at bay, like, yeah. because I didn't need to drink. I was good, yeah. you know? And the strangest thing, all right, so aside from my partner nearly dying, I didn't have as many consequences from being a heroin addict as I did from being an alcoholic. And I think that's because it's like with heroin and smoking pot, like, you're kind of stationary.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't really go on rampages when you're high.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very interesting theory about heroin addicts. Have you ever noticed how heroin addicts look younger than people?
Oh, thank you.
Oh.
Do you notice that? You know, like what I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
Your body gets preserved.
I think it's because they don't have facial expressions while using.
Oh, wow. So their muscles get less used.
Yeah.
I did notice in sobriety I got my first, like, well, I had my anger line, and now I'm getting smile lines. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, fuck this being happy thing. You're making me look old. I'd rather be miserable and young looking.
I'm going to have crow's feet by, like, 33. Shit.
Oh, my God. You're so young.
I gotta stop being happy.
So, anyway, there was a day I'm by myself. And this, I love being able to share this, because in the fellowship that I'm in, I don't get into my drug use as much, so I like that I'm able to share this.
Absolutely.
I was doing heroin, right? Snorting it. I did shoot it for about 3 or 4 months at the end before my partner overdosed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had, like, severe back pain, and what I was doing wasn't cutting it, so that was an excuse to be like, oh, I'll just do it this way.
Yeah.
I was horrible at it. like really horrible at it. Like, I still have a spot. Like, there are people that shoot for years and they're all healed up, and I have like this one little weird spot on my arm from like the pathetic 3 months of me trying
just
to shoot
stabbing
up.
Away.
It was pathetic, which is good. Another reason I'm probably alive.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's a good thing that you're bad at shooting dope.
So exactly. So if you're gonna be bad at something, ladies and gentlemen,
be bad at shooting dope for the love of God.
So I'm driving around delivering food for Order Up. And I go and I cop in the morning and I drive around and get high all day. And then I'm also smoking crack because, ready for this? I don't want my pupils to be small.
Solid.
I don't want to smoke crack. You know? Crack's disgusting. It's miserable.
It's kind of gross.
But I'm going to do it so nobody knows I'm high. So
solid plan, you know?
Here's how it goes.
Yeah.
Get in your car, do the drug you like, feel good on the drug you like. Be worried people are going to know you're on the drug you like. Do the drug you don't like. Think that the cops that you think are everywhere around you saw you do the drug that you don't like.
Cocaine's
and then go home to your girlfriend
drug.
And Wait, get in the shower.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
So you're driving around doing essentially a burn run with crack. That's kind of weird now that I think about it. I don't think I've ever driven around smoking crack.
I was in my
I'm saying, like, you
welcome
know
to Baltimore,
I mean?
Bitches.
Well, you know, I had to get that money.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, it's just a weird burn run. I've never
heard the term burn run.
What?
Yeah.
Mind blown.
Well, tell me, I need to know what it is.
Burn run, like, you know, when you go around smoking weed. A burn run.
Oh, okay.
Like a blunt ride.
Yes, yeah. Got blunt you. Ride. Blunt ride. Yes, yeah. I'm more familiar with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was, and so one day I'm in
Eric's
my bathroom.
Eric's too white. He didn't smoke blunts.
I was really good at rolling blunts.
I love
for
yeah.
a small white suburban girl.
Yeah, 100%.
So I'm in my bathroom at the house I grew up in because nobody's there, and I'm doing my drugs, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm lying to my girlfriend that I'm working. And I realize, I'm like, Mackenzie, all you ever freaking wanted in your life was someone to love you and want to spend time with you. And you are by yourself in a bathroom doing drugs, not even enjoying it at all.
Yeah.
Because you feel bad. It's like, what do they say? Like, head full of program, belly full of alcohol, or like blood full of drugs.
Yeah.
So I came back in and I finally surrendered, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to think that being smart was knowing everything, and now I realize being smart is admitting you know nothing.
Oh, yeah.
And
being smart in recovery is fucking dangerous.
Yeah. Being strong was doing everything on your own, and now I think being strong is asking for help.
Yep.
And I pointed to somebody, asked them to be my sponsor, started doing the steps, went to meetings, was completely transparent about everything. My girlfriend was allowed to drug test me at will.
Mm.
I'm very fortunate. I don't like lying. So
how did
that,
she take that?
She was really upset.
She
wasn't even upset that I relapsed. I mean, obviously she was. She was upset that I lied to her for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And that I didn't ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
But when you don't want to quit, you're not going to ask for help.
Yeah.
No one's going to be like, here, take this away from me when they don't want it taken.
Yeah.
And now that I've been in the program and I have friends that are relapsing, I'm learning that. And that's super freaking difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, don't you get it?
Yeah. You don't, yep. You just want to fucking shake them.
Yeah. So, started doing everything right. And here I am, you know? Like, I finally did what everybody told me to do, which I never wanted to do anything anybody told me to do. I guess it was like that psychic change they talk about, because it finally occurred to me, like, how's your way been working for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we want to be able to solve our own problems and do our own thing.
Oh, yeah.
But finally, enough things had happened, you know, that I was just like, I'm done. This is stupid.
Yep.
I'm going to be alone.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it was rough. And so here I am doing the things I'm supposed to and keeping program at the center of my life, helping other people. I think my favorite thing in the program is, like, 12-step work, picking people up from recovery houses, taking them to meetings. I like to make people laugh, and I think one of the things that I contribute to people's early sobriety is letting them know that they can laugh again.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I know when I first came in, I was like, all right, I'll get sober for my friends and family, and they'll have peace of mind, and I'll just be miserable for the rest of my life.
Oh, yeah.
Because who's going to have fun sober? You know?
Yep.
And I was fine with that. I was like super martyr. I'm like, I will be miserable and sad and bored, but I will live for you.
I'll do it for you.
But, so, now what it's like now, I mean, now I'm just realizing what a shit show I am without drugs and alcohol. I'd say the closest to how it used to be is when I'm hangry.
Oh.
I don't know if you're like that, but I'm hangry, it's like I never quit drinking and drugs. I like spiral out of control. It's like a baby who hasn't, like, I tell my girlfriend, just shove me in the shower and throw a sandwich at me.
Yeah.
I call them cry sandwiches.
Oh, wow. I can totally relate to that.
No, I call it
You're
a cry sandwich.
Speaking my language. Shut up, Eric.
I'm so angry that I don't want to eat, but I know that I need to do this for the good of mankind. And I'm like eating my turkey and cheese, like tear soaked white bread.
Yes. It goes down easier.
Cry sandwiches.
Yeah, cry sandwiches.
David.
Shut up, Eric.
Wow.
Shut up. I watched Castaway the other day and I cried.
Niagara Falls.
Oh my God, I cry about everything.
Niagara Falls. Right?
I cry in like tampon commercials.
He lost Wilson. Okay, I can't relate to that. Okay.
But now I actually have to think about things. I actually have to think about things. I actually have to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
I used to smoke pot to dumb myself down.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to mention that I isolated myself for 30 days to quit smoking pot before my 28th birthday because I realized smoking since 14, I would have been stoned more than half my life.
Ooh,
yeah.
That wasn't okay with me. But every time I tried to quit, I was horrible to be around.
Yeah.
So I went down to my dead grandmother's house, and I called it Mehab.
Was she dead? Wait, she wasn't herself.
Literally, like, didn't talk to anyone for 30 days?
I mean, I talked to the people that lived nearby, but I didn't have any friends or family there.
Oh, that sounds awesome. So your grandmother was already dead?
Yeah.
Okay.
So her house was empty.
She wasn't in the house?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Nope.
So you were just by yourself for 30 days, just doing, like, whatever you want?
Yeah.
Cool.
Not
part of that sounds. So, part of that sounds cool, and part of it sounds creepy as shit.
Well, it's miserable when you don't have your solution. I was drinking the whole time, not alcoholically. I quit.
Well, for your purposes, it sounds awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was awful.
But it, like, just to, like, chill out and, like, you know, binge watch TV and, like, play video games.
This was before binge watching.
But oh, yeah. Wow.
I was playing Dance Dance Revolution because I was going to lose weight too.
Yeah,
I was going to get skinny and hot. Didn't happen.
DDR is the way to go. Yeah.
This was in 2011.
I was an angry high person. I was like, my friends would always be like, how do you get high and you get angry? I was like, I don't know. Everything just pisses me off.
I don't understand that either. I don't understand, like, drug deals going bad when people are stoned. I'm like, how do you even have the effort to pick your gun up?
Dude,
I'd be like, dude, nope.
Oh my, I was furious. I would get high on weed and I would be furious at everybody. I'd be like, why are you a fuck? I don't know. That was weird.
So things are good now, but having to be a person for the first time. A lot of people in the programs say they're trying to get back to who they were. Mm-hmm. Like the 6-year-old in gym, David, having a panic attack. Like, I didn't have anybody to get back to.
I want to get back to that David too.
I'm starting from scratch here. So things are good. I used to think that, you know, experience, strength, and hope was like, my experience was I drank too much. My strength was I had the strength to put the drink down, and my hope is that I'll never drink again. Now I realize it's actually about helping people. So
yeah.
My experience was I needed help. My strength was I asked for help, and my hope is that I can help other people.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I'll end with that.
Nice. Yeah, that's a solid closer.
That's dope.
All right. Me?
Any questions?
Do you want to go first?
Oh, yeah, I'll go first. I'm not going to go to a stock one. I just thought about this. So in deciding fellowships between sober fellowship and clean fellowship, mm-hmm. What were, like, the differences? Like, did you try both? Like, have you – like, what were the differences and what was your ultimate verdict?
Okay. So my brother was in the sober fellowship, mm-hmm. and it was working for him. And there were far more meetings available.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, this is going to sound really bad, but it's an honest program. So when I was in high school, my mom sent me to rehab.
Mm-hmm.
People don't talk about which rehabs. Am I not allowed to do that?
You can do that.
I mean, you can say it.
It was Mountain Manor.
Okay.
There's lots of
them. Yeah, probably.
Good.
Yeah.
There you go. Let's leave it like that.
Yep.
Because whichever one I'm talking about, we don't know.
Exactly.
So I was, I think, 16 years old, and this is after I had gotten coked up and drunk with a girl I had a crush on who kissed me, and she was a straight girl, and I was super stoked.
Oh.
Only to have me drop her off at her boyfriend's house.
Mm.
So driving home on 83,
little
drunk, crazy, sabotage Mackenzie is holding the wheel, and instead of being like, what if I just did this, ran my car into the guardrail at 60 miles an hour.
Did you actually do it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Dude, I've had that thought so many times.
Well,
You did it.
You actually did it.
Yeah. It's a horrible idea because then your car's all fucked up and your mom sends you to Mountain Manor. And my stepdad actually showed up. I was in handcuffs in the back of a cop car. And I crawled out the window and ran into the middle of traffic on, it was either 695 or 83. And he grabbed me out of traffic. He, like, literally saved my life. Like, literally.
Mm-hmm. What the fuck, man?
I was always able to get out of handcuffs.
Those 16?
Like, small wrists or something. Yeah, 16, 17 years old. So I go to Mountain Manor and I get there. And first of all, they make me take my hat off because it's a Jack Daniels hat, which I didn't even think about. I just needed a hat. Hats are my comfort. Like, I cannot.
Me too.
Like, girls at the rehab that I pick them up at, some of them will be on hat intervention. And I'm if you want to make me relapse, taking my hat is a great way to start.
Yep.
Because, like, I need my hat.
Yep.
So I call my mom and I'm like, Mom, it is all, like, drug addicts here. Meanwhile, I'm there because I was all hopped up on drugs. I'm like, they're all white trash and you need to come pick me up because this is not going to work. That's nice. That's my snobby white girl.
You're really from Towson, aren't you?
So she came and got me the next day. And that was my stint in rehab.
Wow.
So, I have no idea why I just told that story. Oh, the fellowships. I'm so sorry, David.
No, by all means.
Oh, that's digress. What I was going to say. So, I'm nothing against the clean fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I've seen as far as mutual friends on Facebook and whatever, there's a very, very high relapse rate.
Ooh.
And now, when my sober friends go back out, bad things can happen. They can die. You know what I mean? You can get drunk and die, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel as if when your drug of choice is something harder, the likelihood of you dying in just doing one night is higher.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've had to bury quite a few people.
Yeah, and I haven't yet, and I know I'm going to.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple friends relapse recently, and it's, I don't know how you guys do it. Because, like, every other week, my friend who's in the clean fellowship posts about somebody. And I just, I needed more. Being sober as long as I am, I don't feel like if somebody put heroin in front of me that I would automatically do it by any means.
Yeah.
I have defense now. I have a program. I have tools. I have everything in place.
Mm-hmm.
But if one of my friends goes out and drinks again, I will pick them up at the bar and drive them home.
Yeah.
If one of my friends goes out and uses again, good luck, because I love you, but I have to practice detachment with love because it's too close to home for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
you gotta protect yourself.
My sick, addict, alcoholic mind is always a little jealous when people go back out. And when they come back in, I'm like, everybody still loves you, and you got to get high.
Mm.
Which is messed up.
Yeah.
But it's the parent program, so that's why I went with the sober program, though I definitely qualify for both. And I am open to going to clean program meetings.
Nice. All right. Very good. All right. Another one. Did sexuality ever play a part in you're using? Did, like, I don't know, confusion, not maybe not necessarily confusion, but like having to, I don't know, like conform, like to act like that girly girl when you weren't, like, did that ever like take a toll on you? And how did that like play a part into your using?
I actually love this question. And again, I'm going to be completely honest, and it may not make me look like the best person, but it's the truth. First of all, I didn't ever actually use that voice that I called my mom with.
I didn't think so.
That was just me trying to make light of the situation.
Yeah, we were being...
It was probably more like, Mom, can you come get me? But yeah, so growing up gay in the time that I did, I'm sure I had it better here than, you know, some kid in Kentucky, you know? But there weren't a lot of people out, and I was a freshman, and I wasn't out. I mean, I was bi first because I had to seem at least half normal, right? And the older lesbians in school actually put me in a locker and also shoved me in a trash can. So people that could have been my mentors or could have made me feel like it gets better, it's going to be okay, were too busy worried about me, I guess, you know, going for their girls or something, because I was bullied.
This happened in high school?
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? Really?
Yeah. It was bad. Like, high school movie, you know?
Weird, I did shit like that in high school. I was a bully.
You bullied people in high school?
I did.
That's like middle school, though.
I owe quite a few amends for that, dude. No, I did.
Really?
I do.
I thought people, like,
grew out of that. David says he's sorry to all of you.
I really am sorry. Here, real quick story. So, software apps, sophomore year, I'm sitting next to this kid who I bullied for years, all through middle school. So it's like 5 years straight at this point. And cops roll in. I'm smoking weed. I have weed in my pocket. I think they're coming for me. I think they're coming for me. No, the cops go to this kid and they're like, stand up right now. He's like, can I grab my bag? And they're like, you touch that bag and we'll drop you. I was like, what the fuck is happening? So they take him. Cops leave with him. Halfway through the fucking school day, they call me down to the office. I was like, fuck, they know I have weed. So I go down to the office. They were like, yeah, so-and-so had a to-kill list, and David's name was on it. Your name was on it. And I was like, holy shit. He was like, yeah, all the people that fucking bullied him, he was going to kill them. He had a gun in his bag. You were on the list. I was like, get the fuck
out of here. Let me guess, you changed your ways forever.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. Right now, I'm a recovering asshole as well, because I was a piece of shit human being, 100%. And, like, I don't know how to make that amends to that person, because, like, that's fucking crazy. And I was totally an asshole.
I think you can call it even.
A living amends. It's a living amends. Yeah. That's a living amends.
Like, I guess.
It is. I mean what positive outcome is going to come from contacting this person?
I don't know.
I thought bullying died, like, after middle school.
It didn't.
Oh, my God.
It didn't, dude.
I wasn't, like, a dick in high school like that.
I was.
Well, I was bullied, and,
I'm sorry.
All right. To get back to the sexuality question.
Yes. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Drugs and alcohol not only help me get out of myself, but let's be real. When people have drugs or alcohol in their system, they're a little more open. Let's just say I got to make out with a lot of straight girls because of alcohol.
Nice.
Yeah.
And
makes sense.
That's one of the things that I thought of, too, when I was younger. Before now there's, like, all sorts of young pan people or whatever the hell they are, and gay and bi. Like, everybody's open like that now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of young people in the programs. And it was my fear for a long time. Like, if I can't drink a little bit with these people, what's going to ever make them want to be with me? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I always convinced myself, like, oh, they want to be with me sober. They're just too scared. So then when they're drinking, the truth comes out. And that's coming from somebody that slept with men when they were drinking, which is far from the truth. You know what I mean? So, and the self-hatred, you know, like the not feeling good enough and not fitting in. I mean, drinking and drugging was absolutely akin to that. And it's funny because I have a younger friend in the program who's also gay. And she's a lot younger than I am. She's like 21, 22. And I went to hear her share. And the fact that she was gay did not come up once in her entire story. And that was unfathomable to me.
Yeah.
And I asked her, I was like, you know, you don't even talk about being gay or, like, drinking because you were gay. She's like, that wasn't an issue. Like, that wasn't what made me drink. That wasn't what made me drug. And I was like, damn, lucky. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, good for you that's not, like, it's still so ingrained in me because it was such a hard thing that now, you know, I shared it at a meeting with a bunch of older ladies. It was actually in Eldersburg last week. And I shared with them because I'm very open. And I said, you know, my first thought when I come in here is that you guys are judging me for being gay.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realize is that, like, that's me judging them.
Ooh.
For being judgy when they may not be.
That's meta judgment.
It's true. I do meta. I like that.
Oh my
that.
God, I love that.
I'm super meta judgmental.
That's great.
Because I'm always thinking, I'm like, they're thinking that I'm weird. They're thinking I'm too masculine or like whatever. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, that's an interesting, like, so you're saying like generationally,
mm-hmm.
like, so younger, like the generation under all of us,
uh-huh.
that generation isn't going to have the same feeling that you have towards like sexuality because it's more accepted.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's wild.
And I'm sure, like, progressing backwards, it just got harder and harder and harder.
Yeah.
Like, in the 50s, like, being a lesbian or being a gay man, like, that must have been astronomical.
Yeah, there's a gentleman in Towson who's an older gay man, and, you know, I share about my struggles, and he just kind of smiles at me, and I'm like, look, I know, I get it. You had it worse.
Yeah.
But I get resentful, though, because, like, if I went to high school now, I mean, I'd be fucking homecoming king. Right? Like, I would. I'd be like funny and popular.
You'd be David the
whatever,
homecoming king.
You know, like, yeah. I wish that I get resentful.
This David wasn't even homecoming king. Son of a bitch.
I get resentful that I didn't get the opportunity to be myself without just being that gay girl.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes I feel like holier than thou, like, why aren't these young gays thanking me for all my trailblazing efforts for the gay community?
Yeah.
Which well, consisted good. Of drinking and doing right. drugs and taking advantage of straight people.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's good that they're, you know, that people feel that it's not, they don't have to feel different. They feel just mm-hmm. like everyone else. It's, I mean, that's the whole point. It's
yeah.
whatever, that's what you're striving for is that inclusive feeling.
Yeah.
And that's what it,
progress.
You know,
yeah.
It was just amazing to me because it's
wild.
Such a big part of my story.
Yeah. That's fucking dope. I mean, mm-hmm. that's cool.
Nice. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah.
Right.
Are you going to keep going or is it me?
I got two more.
Do you want me to go and then you can go?
I'm going to alternate.
Okay.
You going to go?
All right. We'll switch it up. Take right. it, Eric.
I have to ask this question because I just have to. So you've read... God damn it, Luna.
That is not a book I'm familiar with, no.
Well, but you've read... Okay, so
it's
obviously...
It's about the moon.
Yeah. obviously, you've read the big book.
Yes.
So I have a question, since you are a female. How do you feel about the... Now, don't get me wrong. The big book's a great read. Great read.
Do I seem easily offended to you?
There is vocabulary in there that's wonderful. Well, it's not being easily offended. It's like language, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the section, you know, for the wives, or, you know, just some of the, let's say, dated, you know.
The toxic masculinity.
Yeah, we can go there.
Inside the big book.
We can go there. The subtle racism. You know, like, how do you feel about that? And, like, do you feel like there needs to be kind of an update to kind of, you know, meet the needs of, you know, 2019?
It's funny. I actually have... what I believe to be a pretty good answer for this, though I think I've thought about it a little bit. So, full disclosure, I'm a Christian, okay? And, people, you know, like my partner and many people are like, the Bible is ridiculous, right? And I can totally see how it is. Like,
it is.
I'm a Christian, but I'm not a blind, deaf person. Like, I know it's ridiculous.
Yes.
And, what I say is, you know, the Bible was written by a person, and God did not pick up a pen and write it, and you got to take that for what it's worth. You know, just imagine this guy sitting there, and he's writing something, and he's writing his truth or whatever, and he's like, I don't really like gay people. Let me put in there that that's not okay. You know, while I'm at it, kind of self-serving.
Yeah.
And I know that people say you can't pick and choose what you do believe and don't believe in it. Bullshit.
Yes, you absolutely
can.
110%.
100%
you can. Yep.
And I think, you know, and when it comes to the big book, I mean, it was written by man, not necessarily about God, but there's you have to take into consideration the times. Now, do we need to update it? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If people are still getting sober...
I hear you. You can finish.
All right,
I
like this.
I have a rebuttal for this.
No, yeah. It's fine. I think there are other pieces of literature, and to be honest, I'm not very familiar with all the different fellowships' literatures.
Yeah, the clean literature.
Yeah,
There's more than that, too.
I'm not a big reader.
Yeah, there's lots of them.
I'm not a big reader, I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But I have read, the Acceptance Pamphlet, the 12 and 12. Mm-hmm. I feel like there are other options that we don't necessarily have to change the original language in the book. Now, when I read, For Wives or whatever, mm-hmm. I just switch it out for people in relationships with alcoholics. You know, it doesn't have to be a woman sitting at home waiting for her alcoholic man to get home.
Yeah.
You know, it could be your freaking kids.
Yeah, a gay man reading that, okay, I can skip this fucking section.
So
how does this apply?
But that's kind of you're expecting people to make a change to it, to the literature in their head.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big ask for some people.
It is for some people, is the active word there.
I mean,
for some people it is, but as alcoholics and addicts, aren't we constantly changing things to fit our needs and what we want? So why should it be hard to do in this situation?
That's a,
everybody wants to qualify 100%. In.
It's also just
absolutely.
I just don't feel like it's appropriate at this point in time.
Mm.
That's your opinion.
It's appropriate, and we can talk about editions. This isn't the first edition of the big book. I mean, what is it? It's the fourth edition, right? If I'm correct,
no, it is. It's the fourth.
It's the fourth.
Oh, you tell me.
I know you haven't read it.
I've read parts,
but so I mean, you're on the fourth edition. So what's the problem with going to a fifth edition and making it more acceptable? I mean, really, honestly, just making it more PC. If we're being honest,
Where does it end?
That's a snowball effect,
so,
dude.
For the Wives snowball. Should be for, you know, it should just be relation. Don't make it just for the wives.
I agree with that. It's a slippery slope. Just like you said, being more PC. Anybody can be offended by anything.
Oh, my God, you're telling me.
This is 2019. We know this.
Okay, so I'll use a personal example. I have a real issue with God. You are very aware of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are like, oh, just look at it as good orderly direction, or look at it as this. And it's like, no, I don't, relate to that word. And, you know, it's like, well, just look at it as something else. And it's like, I'm not. I don't relate to the word. So, asking me to change it to be, something else, I just don't accept that. Why can't I just use a different word that I do accept? Or if it doesn't work, you know, not use it.
Because then people might not accept your word.
To accept my word.
Here's my question. I agree... So the whole PC thing is a slippery slope because, mm-hmm. where does it end? You know, I don't agree with all of the traditions, okay, but I can't just go and change them because I don't agree with them.
Yeah. Okay.
I get that we don't want to be racist and sexist and whatever.
The racism and the sexism, that's really where it's at, is why can't we remove that to update to the times?
Okay. I, in all honesty, I mean, I would be open to that. Why couldn't we just have both options available? I'm with you. You could still get the first edition.
Yeah, you still have that. I mean, okay. In the other fellowship,
the clean fellowship,
you can say that
there is the you know about the baby blue people, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. I think I have a baby blue over there. Mm-hmm. There is another edition that floats around, which is three editions before the edition that we're currently using.
Okay.
So, and those people swear by
the third edition.
Yeah. It's the baby blue is the only basic text that we're going to use.
Yeah.
And fuck the sixth tradition, because then you get into this whole ridiculous, thing.
Yeah. The politics.
Yeah. The politics of it all. But you know, that's a very different, it's not very different. They're very similar, but some of the language is changed, and you know, that book is still available.
Yeah.
You know, so why don't you just make one where my thing is, that language could 100% deter somebody.
Got it.
That's where I'm at. Because if I looked at that, I would be like, what the fuck? Like, you know,
these racist, sexist, freaking Bible-thumping assholes.
Yes, that's how I feel. So, like, I'm like, what? Like, when I first saw Four of the Wives, I was like, what the fuck is this shit? Like,
No, I totally get where you're coming from. And I think what it comes down to is somebody is always going to be offended by something. And your hopes is that whoever handed this person the big book...
Mm-hmm.
Made sure that they knew it was with a grain of salt and to pull what helps them from it and to kind of leave the other shit by the wayside.
Yeah.
And that they have relationships with people in the programs rather than, like, if there's a dude alone in a cell and somebody throws the big book in there, like, that would suck because then they have no context for it. They have nobody to discuss it with and they might be thinking, what racist, sexist, horrible people.
Mm-hmm.
But we my hope, at least, is that there are people, that's why you have a sponsor too, like somebody to go through it with.
Absolutely.
To kind of be like, eh, I don't know how I feel about this. I get it. Like, I'm with you and I think there needs to be changes, but I also think it's kind of like when old people use slurs and don't realize they're doing it.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Not that it's too late for them to change, but I guess it's just you have to take it with a grain of salt and realize this is freaking old.
Yeah.
The only thing that they've changed in the newer editions is the stories in the back, which I disagree with. I think that they're so worried about losing the main point and that it has been working. When I say it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
It has worked for so many years. And who knows how many people have died because they read Four of the Wives and went back out.
Yeah.
I can't speak to that.
No, none of us can.
But... it has helped so many people, and I do think, though, with our generation up and coming, from what I see, it is the more mature people that want to keep things the same.
Mm-hmm.
So when our time comes, I do foresee that as a possibility.
Yeah.
And I don't disagree with it. I'm not like, if we change it, we'll die.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm always about making things, like... I don't know.
More inclusive.
Progressing and like, you know, let's progress towards something more inclusive of everyone. You know, like, I don't think, I mean, obviously we do talk about like this fellowship to that fellowship and like, you know, blah, blah, blah.
We should write our own that does both.
I would love that.
We should sit down.
I think there should be.
I would love that so much.
I think there should be inclusion of some other stuff in there too. Like,
because
I kind of grab from everything, but.
I am against building walls.
Yeah.
Subtle hint.
Yeah,
that was nice.
Yeah,
wink.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like bringing people together, and my grand sponsor does both fellowships, numerous fellowships, actually.
I'm probably going to go there. See, I shared the other night, and this girl spoke.
I'm going to get you to come over.
After I shared, she spoke, and she said so many things similar to myself. She's like, you know, I like being able to cry in front of people. We should be open.
Me too, Eric.
I'm an open book. We're not talking about Castaway. And
he is a crier.
No, I'm a crier too. But I really liked what she had to say, and she was going to be celebrating in a year in 12 days. And after the meeting, I said, look, I want to come to your anniversary.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know you, but that's my thing. I want to come to your anniversary. And
first
she said
year
to me,
anniversaries are the
and
best.
She was like, but it's in the Clean Fellowship. Like, I was going to hate her forever. I was like, girl, did you hear my story?
Yeah.
I was like, I qualify to be in both.
100%.
So I definitely, you know, like David, I want to eliminate that I'm on this side,
plan.
You're on that side thing.
I agree, and I think that should be the game plan. It's just, you know, it's hard.
That's
for
one
people,
of the things
right?
I liked about, you know, I looked on the site for the podcast, and I saw the implementing of both. And I was like, good, because the freaking world needs this.
Absolutely.
Because what's going to happen? We're going to have more people in recovery to reach out to. Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, exactly. And in the Clean Fellowship, like we say, alcohol is a drug.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Yeah. It is in the scope of drugs. Like, is it necessarily a narcotic? No. But, like, a lot of drugs aren't necessarily narcotic drugs.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of just something that...
It's just a fucking word, like, and the fact that we're getting held up by just mere words instead of the actual feelings and experience, the strength,
correct,
the hope,
correct,
letting that stupid shit divide us from ultimately progressing ourselves, getting healthier, getting better, and becoming a bigger fellowship.
Yeah.
And your foundation of hope for everybody.
When I share in meetings and I'm to tell my story, because, you know, a lot of people in my fellowship have issues with people talking about drugs, mm-hmm. you know, like you should respect this fellowship and not. Well, first of all, it's a part of my story. Second of all, read page 417 of the big book. It's about acceptance. Call your sponsor. But I always say it doesn't matter what problems we had. We all have the same solution.
There mm-hmm. you go.
So
it's a feelings thing. Then.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, why would you judge somebody else? It's like, just because you don't know what it's like to be in physical withdrawal from heroin or to worry about copping because you get to walk to a liquor store and open your drug of choice freely, mm-hmm. You know, like, it's... It reminds me of that girl that said, Mom, come get me out of here.
Yeah.
Like, what a dick.
Yeah. Like, our pain is minutely different, but ultimately the same.
Yeah, it's about how you feel.
Yep.
But, okay, so moving on. That was a good little conversation.
Loved it.
Okay, I gotta ask. You said there was a week between...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I did pick up on that.
Mm-hmm. That's why I tried to glaze over it.
That's why my face was like...
Wait, what?
I was like, wait, huh? Mm-hmm.
I glazed over it, what?
Yeah, okay, 9 years, and then you've been with...
Almost two.
Oh, all right.
For how long?
Almost two now.
Almost two, yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Better than Eric's contract. I gotta ask, do you consider yourself codependent?
Yes.
Ooh.
It's an honest program, absolutely. Yeah.
So do you, like, have you looked into, like, codependency at all? Have you read, like, Codependent No More or anything like that?
I haven't. It's actually something, you know, so the first year is about dealing with not drinking and not using.
Right? Absolutely.
And my second year, I'm in the middle of filing for bankruptcy, and I would like to go to the gym. I keep calling it my financial physical year. Mm-hmm. But being, when your problem is drugs and alcohol for such a long time, that's, like, the problem that's on the surface, right? Mm-hmm. So we take that away, and here I am in my second year, and I don't have that to blame for relationship problems anymore.
Yep.
I don't have it to blame for any kind of problem anymore, because mm-hmm. it's not what's up here. So I'm just beginning to start recognizing. I mean, I've always known I was codependent on some level. Mm-hmm. When I used to hate leaving my mom, like I thought she was going to die, I always have irrational fears of loss with people. I had a friend yesterday ghost me in the middle of the afternoon, and until this afternoon, last 24 hours, I thought she was dead, because she had just talked about suicide and has been struggling, and so it was a really bad time to ghost me.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, I think I'm definitely codependent. I have not read anything, but it's a character defect of mine that has served me. Fortunately, my partner is very independent. She's not codependent like I am. And so when we have fights and when we have issues and I want to fix it right away because I'm a fix-it person and I want to apologize and I want to make up and I want everything to be great, she doesn't always want to do that.
Make up sex.
That's not happening right now. we're not in a fight or anything right now. But I never thought that I would learn how to be alone whilst in a relationship. Mm. And
I think
is the perfect person for me right now in my life, that she supports my sobriety. And she doesn't co-sign my codependent bullshit.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. And also I always say about people that relapse and people that lie about their using, they still have something to protect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
They still have something to protect that they don't want to lose. And at this point in time...
We were literally having this conversation.
I'm not ready to lose my codependency.
Oh, yeah.
It's something that I'm keeping an eye on,
mm-hmm.
but my life is manageable. You know what I mean? Like, look at the thing, the powerlessness and that sort of thing that we deal with the drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it the same way. It's kind of like, I'm going to keep an eye on this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I'm aware of it, and I do small things to try to...
I'm so mad you chuckled at that.
Of course I did. I'm 12. I do things to... I recognize it, and I'm trying to change behaviors. Let's put it that way. I am working on changing behaviors.
6 and 7. Yeah.
I mean, I have one friend who codependency really... Like, I can see it fuck up his life.
Oh, yeah.
Like, really... Like, actively see it, like, a using type situation mm-hmm. where it's like, wow, dude, your life is fucking unmanageable.
Mm-hmm.
Like it really astonishes me when I actually, like, witness it. And, like, I used to have, like, really, you know, I had codependent tendencies and stuff, mm-hmm. so, like, I get it, but years of therapy and shit, I guess.
Oh, God, right? I've been in therapy forever.
It's hard, and I can see how difficult, like, codependency can be for people to overcome, and, yeah.
It's just really helpful that my partner is not.
That's great. No, that's good.
Yeah. Because all my other ones have been. Because
then you guys just feed off each other. Mm-hmm. One of you's a fixer, and the other one's, like, you know, needs, like, the validation, and it's like, oh my, it's just a cycle.
That's a cycle, like, yep.
You know?
But I think if I were to say to you that I don't have a problem with codependency, you would probably think I'm going to relapse, because you'd be like, if this bitch can't be honest with herself about her relationships, then who knows what she's doing with drugs and alcohol.
Yep. Well, the weak, man. The weak. Yeah. That is wild.
Yeah, well, I've known her for 20-some years, and, like, we decided we were going to hang out, and here I'm thinking, this will be casual, like, whatever, I just got out of a huge relationship, I'm newly sober. Like, I did not go in with the goal of, like, U-hauling it. Mm. And
nice, I like that,
and, U-hauling it. It just ended up that way, and I felt horribly guilty about it. I felt horrible about it, too, because I couldn't mourn the loss of my last relationship as much as I probably should have.
That was kind of, yeah, I was curious about that. Like, 9 years is, like,
that's a substantial amount of time.
I have people tell me, you know, and, like, if this relationship with my current partner is to end, that I might be mourning two relationships, because I never got to fully... But the thing is that... she was actually very, at the beginning, she understood. So, you know, she's not an idiot. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a long relationship. And I would cry, and I would be upset, and she would comfort me. But then it gets to the point where that starts to hurt her ego a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, why are you still crying over this bitch? You have me.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I shy away from that. As much as I want closure with my ex, I have no interest in being in a relationship with her again. I think that we needed to break up for many reasons. Her family didn't like me. She wanted kids. I did not want kids. There were a million reasons that we should have broken up, but we loved each other, and we were super codependent, and this is how it had to end, because we weren't going to break up unless we were ripped apart.
Mm-hmm.
And we were ripped apart, but it was for the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, it's unfortunate, though, because when you're with somebody for the first time, and they've just been in a 9-year relationship, I mean, you got to be questioning.
Oh,
but,
man.
I mean, she's been amazing. You know, we're pretty open with our communication.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more so me. I want to talk about everything all the time. And she's kind of more of a, I'm going to wait and reflect and evaluate my feelings person.
Yeah.
Which has been hard. I mean, our fights are difficult. It's a lot of me talking and a lot of her sitting there silently wishing I would stop talking.
Yeah.
Wow. Sounds rough.
But we're both making steps, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
Any more?
Well, you have two, right?
I have two.
And, we're starting to...
We're pushing time?
So you two.
We could do this all weekend.
Yeah. I know.
This is good.
This is great. I hit the equipment. Off the recovery track real quick, I see your tattoo on your arm. The goat de lee.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am no longer gay. I swear to God, David. Okay, so seriously, my girlfriend, my mom, everyone's going to listen to this and everyone's going to be like, he needs to be your best friend.
Oh, yes.
So a couple weeks ago while I'm in New York, I'm with my mom and my aunt and my mom's friend. And I was like, let's get tattoos.
Yeah.
I only have one. The other one that I have says be still. It's a sobriety tattoo, but not like to the point of getting the triangle, you know? Oh,
God, don't do that, please.
I will not.
Good.
I got one that said be still because I'm a freaking whirling dervish, as they say.
Love it.
I want to fix things right away. I want to fix and do and talk and talk and talk, as I said. So be still is like my be present, evaluate, like... Be here, be now. It's like sobriety program type tattoo.
A little bit.
My girlfriend got still B because she has a brain disease and she has had 18 brain surgeries.
Oh, wow.
Two of which I've been with her through. And it was my idea to get these tattoos because it's like a couple's tattoo, but not really.
Yep. Yeah.
So hers is just a reminder, you know, keep fucking going, you know, keep at it. And that's kind of funny. Hers is like saying keep going and mine saying stop.
That's perfect.
But back to the goat.
The goat to
Lee. So, I'm actually a Leo. People ask a lot if I'm a Capricorn because I have a thing for goats.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. It hasn't been my whole life. You know, people are like, I love dolphins. I love dogs. Yeah. I love cats. One day I was just thinking about it. I'm like, what's my favorite animal?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it and I was like, goats, man. I think they're awesome looking. Mm-hmm. I think they're funny as hell.
They're rad like, fucking animals.
Screaming and passing out.
Yes.
You know? Kind of like us, right?
Yeah.
I'm just really into goats. And I also speak French fluently.
Ooh.
And I love Paris.
Second one.
I love Paris. I've been like 6 or 7 times. I've had birthdays there. Like, it's just a big... And I love the fleur-de-lis. Okay. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, Mom, let's get tattoos tomorrow. My mom didn't have a tattoo. She got a little bumblebee. 71 years old, she got her first tattoo.
Red.
Whoa. Yeah, it was awesome. We got them in New York together. And I wanted to design my own tattoo, and I'm sitting there thinking about it. And I'm, like, thinking about goats, and I'm thinking about fleur-de-lis, and then I just saw it. I was like, I can freaking make a goat head in the shape of a fleur-de-lis.
Yeah.
And my mom calls it fleur-de-chèvre, you know, because chef mm-hmm. is goat. Yeah.
Yep.
Because I was calling it goat-de-lis, which is what you said.
Yes.
But that actually doesn't make as much sense as fleur-de-chèvre. So,
fleur-de-chèvre sounds better. It's French.
But, so I get this tattoo, right? I feel like we should post a picture of it on the site so people know what we're talking about.
Totally game.
And it's in the shape of a fleur-de-lis, and it's a goat. And you're the first person, without me saying what it was, that said what it was. My friends are like, why do you have, like, a Satan goat? And I get so mad. I'm like, he's not evil. His name is Victor.
Yeah. Nice.
My tattoo artist's wife was Victoria. And I was looking at his Instagram, and it was like the love of his life. And I'm like, well, all right, I'll name him Victor after his wife. And, you know, Victor, winner, whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just saw it in my head. I was like, I can make this fit. So,
love it.
Thank like you for it. Calling it out. I'm very impressed. That makes me happy. It's not just a little weird Satan tattoo.
No. Very good. And back to the real question. How has your addiction, how is your addiction manifested in recovery?
I don't think that my addiction itself... Like the actual drug or the alcohol.
No, not that.
Well, codependence. I mean, didn't we just talk about it?
We did.
codependence. But well, I don't know if you did retail therapy.
No, I think my girlfriend likes to shop a lot, but we buy really cheap things. We go to like Walmart or like Five Below.
That's dangerous.
Oh, it's great.
I know about that.
Like,
These things called Squishmallows. They're like these really fluffy, comfortable, soft stuffed animals. We have like over 60 of them.
So are those the ones with like the giant eyes? Like the creepy eyes?
No.
Okay.
But everyone should check them out. They're amazing.
Squishmallows.
So, I've been to play poker a couple times, but not out of control because I could have gambling issues, but I don't because I enjoy it to the point. Kind of like I said, if you loved it so much, you'd figure out a way to do it manageably.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, I mean, aside from my codependence, and I think I have difficulty with patience, which is also the Be Still tattoo.
Yeah. Mm.
I have no patience for anything. Before, it's like, I feel like shit, I'll do some drugs, I'll be fine.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's like, I feel like shit, and I have to actually sit there and feel like shit.
Yeah, we all love that instant gratification.
And wait it out. And I'm just horrible at it. I'm really bad at being patient. I've gotten better. I recognize it. But not being able to have that instant solution. I mean, the program's a solution, but it's not instant. And you can't just, like, pop a pill a program and be fine in 5 minutes.
Ooh.
You know, you got to, like...
We should make an infomercial. Like a joke infomercial. Program a pill.
Where it's, like... like pages of the big book in a capsule.
if one doesn't work, take two or three.
It's like, oh shit, I took the Four Wives chapter and I'm suddenly racist.
Yes.
That's good.
Fantastic. All right. Well, good. Eric has one final question, I believe.
Which one? The one about children?
What?
What? Is this what you're asking me? The one where you thought it went really dark?
Made it fucking weird.
Okay, here, let me ask you. Does this sound weird?
Don't make it. God damn it.
I just want to ask. Well, I mean...
Go ahead. Go ahead. It's your question.
So, you know, there's a lot of steps, right? All right? And just, you know, like...
Well, there's 12.
Yeah, there's 12, right? And, you know...
That's how many there are?
There's 12.
Shit.
Now, you know, everyone says who has kids, you know, they don't have a favorite child.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're lying.
Yeah, they're lying.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Everyone has a favorite child. Did I say like one of them died or something?
Yes, you did.
Oh, okay, I don't remember. So if you could only save one of your children, so one step, what's your favorite step?
Have you worked all 12?
Six or seven.
Six or seven.
I haven't. I'm actually still in nine, but I...
Six or seven?
Okay.
Really?
Well, six, I guess... See, because I like some of my character defects.
That's mm-hmm. fine.
Because some of them are like sarcasm and cynicism and things that have served me as far as my sense of humor.
I love cynicism.
And making people laugh. Mm-hmm. And my sponsor, I was going to say bless your heart, but not in the condescending way. Not in the condescending way.
Yes.
She said to me, she's like, because that was the scariest one for me. You know, for many people, it's 4 and 5, mm-hmm. right? Of course.
Yeah.
But as I said before, I'm an open book. So me being like, oh, yeah, like, I was molested, and I totally stole $500 from this person, and, like, I hate this person. You know, like, I have no problem saying all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came down to identifying my character defects and then humbly asking God to, like, remove my shortcomings, that gave me pause because I was like, oh, shit, like, now I can never be funny again. You know, like, I can never be judgmental of someone for the point of making someone else laugh.
It does change your humor.
She saved my life, though, because she was like, look, think about it this way. You don't have to have all of them removed. You just need to basically use your powers for good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you can alter the defect in such a way that helps you and other people. Now, if it's like something like being racist or sexist, as we were talking about, like, yes, please remove it.
Yes.
But if it's something like being sarcastic or like making fun of somebody's outfit or, you know what I mean? Like, and it's going to make other people laugh. You just think of,
it's kind of like
the amend step.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to harm them or help them? And I feel like a lot of times my jokes do more good than harm.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely... Probably six. Just talking about how horrible I am. Not wanting to change it.
Yeah.
But discussing it. Six would be my favorite child so far.
Six is good.
I'm familiar with 10, 11, and 12.
Yeah.
I love to pray, not so much meditating, because obviously praying is talking, meditating is listening, and much better at talking.
Be still.
Meditating's great, though.
It is. I'll get there. My brother meditates every day.
Mm-hmm.
And 12, you know... Taking it to other people. I am sponsoring someone, and I give people rides, and I talk to people, and I have a job in my home group.
It's a very important
It's one of the ones that I feel like you start practicing before you've actually gone through it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, 12 is definitely... you should be doing 12. I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but, like, really, as soon as you get here...
Yeah,
as soon as you chair a meeting.
I know that'll sound fucking ridiculous to people who, like, haven't worked steps, but it's like... No, I mean, like, as soon as you're giving that person their first ride to a meeting, and you might have, like, a week... You're working step 12.
Or sharing about how miserable you are and reminding old timers how bad it was, which makes them reinvigorate their program.
Yeah.
I had people thank me for like sounding so ridiculous. Yeah. They're like, thank you for your awful, horrible, self-serving share because you just remind me how fucked up I was.
Yeah. Yep.
I think 9 might end up being my favorite because I want that relief that comes with having made amends, which is probably why I put off doing it, because I don't want it to be self-serving.
So do you plan on doing actual amendses, or do you plan on doing mostly living amends?
I plan on doing actual. I like awkward situations. I like closure.
Yep.
And like, I'm ready to sit down and talk with like my stepmother. You know what I mean? Oh, like I would call every ex-girlfriend, but I know that that's messed up.
That.
I wanted to have a show once where all my ex-girlfriends
were
brought
on. We can
do that,
by the way. Not kidding.
Do you have enough mics for that?
No, we can do... We'll go fucking, like, you know, I got enough cameras for that, so...
Mackenzie, season 1.
Yeah.
I'm sick, man.
Binge-watch
I used to
Mackenzie.
Want a dating show where it was like me and all my exes, and I had to choose which one of them I wanted to get back together with.
That's a great idea.
This is years ago.
Like Flavor of Love with Mackenzie.
Right? Exactly. Or with exes. Yeah.
Flavor.
It'd be a shit show. My girlfriend's going to kill me.
That's a great idea, though, if you think about it. I don't know why that's not a reality show.
I have lots of show ideas.
Anybody listening? Patent pending. We came up with it.
Lots of show ideas.
Think about just how much of it... That would be such a train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all these
That is great reality TV right there.
It's great reality.
That is trash TV at its finest.
Oh my God, it'd be great.
We should just write a scripted one, though. Like, I love scripted pretend reality shows.
Yeah.
Dude, you guys are the digital minds. Make this shit happen.
What was that show? It was made to be like The Bachelor, but it was like improv'd. And it was amazing. And it was only on for a brief... Oh, God. Sorry, guys. I don't know what it's called.
I don't know. My wife watches Real Husbands of Hollywood or whatever.
Yeah.
And she loves that shit. And I've watched a few episodes. I'm like, I like Nick Carter a lot. So
when I was getting high, I loved to watch the Bad Girls Club.
Nick Cannon?
Is it
Nick
Cannon? I met some girls from the Bad Girls Club.
Really?
Nick Cannon.
Nice. All right.
Nick Cannon. Yeah. Fuck, I said Nick Carter. I was like, he's the Backstreet Boy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. I was thinking Aaron Carter, his little brother. I was like, man, that's specific.
Aaron Carter.
They're both turds.
Aaron Carter does not look well.
No.
No, he doesn't.
He should probably be here with
come
us.
Come to a meeting, Aaron. We're waiting
we'll
for you.
We'll pick you up.
come to the podcast, buddy.
All right, man.
All right.
That's all.
We'll at you on Twitter. All right. Well,
that was dope.
Yeah, that was a great one. Thank you.
I would be happy to come anytime.
Well, we'll talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get you back for sure. All right. Well, we would like to thank our guest, Mackenzie, for joining us today. Clap track, Eric. God, we need a
That's
real clap
not
track.
What that sounds like.
Whoa, we're peaking. We're peaking.
Sorry, everybody's cars, stereos. I peaked you. All right. Well, again, thank you, Mackenzie. Here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts and alcoholics. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction and alcoholism. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict and alcoholic wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button. Every addict and alcoholic deserves to hear our message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We'll probably get on IG sometime soon. Eric was talking about that.
We are getting on IG.
Visit our website, podcastrecovery.com. Contact us. We can do phone interviews for all you people around the world.
A lot coming up.
And we love you. Thank you again, Mackenzie.
Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
You did a great job. Everybody, stay clean. Stay sober. Have a good night.